if there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Slightly weak voice today, but I should be able to do the show. Greenfell says, I have a question. Why isn't there even a single case of someone named John Frank in the Anglosphere? Although lots of them in the Franco world, John Francis. That's a good question. I don't know about this. End of the line, Joel says, there is a traditional of double first names in Francophone countries. Oh yeah, absolutely. There's some degree of it in France, but in Quebec it went absolutely insane. Because, and I think it's an illustration ultimately of the degree of brokenness of your woman. Because what happened in the Révolution Tranquille in Quebec is basically an abandonment of religion, but an abandonment of the solid ties of marriage also, just like in most places of Western civilization. And it has resulted in men giving power on the choosing of names to women, wanting to share it. But now each people wanted to give their name. And so what do we end up with? We end up with quadruple names. So very commonly in Quebec, you will see Jean-Olivier Bertrand Mercier. So the guy has received one first name from his mom, one first name from his dad, one last name from his mom, one last name from his dad. I mean, it is ridiculous. And you'll see all sorts of quadruple names instead of just... The natural way to approach this is if you want to give some power to women, give them the control of the second baby, the fourth baby, the sixth baby. But see, there's so much fight to influence the single child that women want to bottleneck us to, that you end up with a naming system in Quebec that is absolutely ridiculous. That needs to be fixed, not just because of the naming system, but because of the symptoms behind it, because of the pathology behind it. And it's the pathology of the fact that when women decide to bottleneck your race, when women decide you're not going to breed more than one child per vagina, they become insane about controlling that one child. We need to make marriage a commitment to have more than one children. It's not viable. It's simply not viable otherwise. So we're either going to disappear or we're going to fix this. Or we're going to survive in some way while fixing it. But the more it takes time to fix this, the more... The least we will be represented in our countries of the future. A big heist of Kit Kat has occurred in central Italy. We can confirm that 12 tons of Kit Kat products were stolen while in transit between our factory in central Italy and their destination in Poland. We are working closely with local authorities and supply chain partners to investigate. The good news, there are no concerns for consumer safety and supply is not affected. Wow, 12 tons of Kit Kat. How much is that worth? I don't know. But a massive, massive chocolate heist happening in Europe. François Garceau says, never trust someone with two first name and last name. I don't know that we should never trust them. ELDR says it comes from their mothers pressuring them to maintain their delusional worldview. Yeah, and nature will have a fix. That's the good news. The bad news is we're probably not going to see much of that fix in our lifetime. The bad news is there will be generations of suffering, and there will be generations of withdrawal for European people from massive areas that they used to populate. But at the end of it, no matter where we survive, nature will fix this. Nature will fix this simply because the women who are adopting this bottleneck mentality, they are bottlenecking themselves. And the women who are like, I want 6 children, I want 7 children, they end up more represented in the next generation. And eventually, no matter the path through which it fixes itself, it has to. I'm happy that Modern Day Debate has invited me to a debate with Nick Matto. So it's this guy right here. He had a mimetic moment this week, or maybe this weekend, I don't know. There were clips of him interacting with Sneeko, and he corrects him on something, and they memed a lot around the idea that, well, Sneeko was wrong, and I corrected him. Look at Sneeko getting owned by facts and logic. I haven't paid attention much to the correction itself, but now I've watched the whole debate. And it's a well-balanced debate. Nick Matto has an interesting style of debate, so I can't wait to face him. So he's this guy who keeps correcting on details, and I think it's gonna be good against me. I think it's gonna be a good pairing, because knowing that he's that way, I'm gonna be very careful about verifying everything I say. And you guys know how precise I like to be when I want to be. So it's like, oh, well, I want to see another face of Nick Matto. I want to see how does he react in a debate where his opponent is not loose with phrasings, is not loose with conclusions. So what I will have to do is arrive at this debate hyper-prepared with, this is the statement that I'm talking about, and it's been made by this person at this year. And I can't wait to see how he reacts to this, because it's very easy because of the low IQs of people out there. And, you know, not a slight towards Sneeko, but he's not a doctor. He's not close to it. He's somewhere above average while remaining within the dumb region. So I can't wait to see what Matto can do against a guy like me, who's much more precise, and I'm going to make sure that he may disagree with the sources I use, but I will make sure that I arrive with credibly quoted sources, and that he can at least reply rather than just nitpick on details. He also has a very special positioning. So this guy knows a lot. I would say he knows probably 10 times more about the Middle East than I do. He knows a lot. Like Sneeko said, of course Saudi Arabia is making commerce with Israel. And immediately Nick Matto knew, no, they're not. They're making commerce with the US, but not with Israel. And it's like, wow, I didn't know this. I Googled it. He's right. So the guy knows like documentary facts about everything, and he knows the quotes, and he has his own opinion on all little quotes and how they're taken out of context, or it doesn't exactly mean this, or this happened in that context. So he's extremely detailed. I honestly have never seen a talent of that level defending the Israeli position. Extremely rhetorical, extremely dynamic. I can't wait to see what he's going to do against a more grounded, reasonable argument, because I'm going to approach this debate in a very reasonable way. You guys know I'm not emotive very much anyways about the Israeli-Palestine stuff. I'm not emotional about it that much. But he has a bizarre positioning where he says Israel is right in the conflict against Palestine, but he also roots for Iran. It's a bizarre mixing. I can't wait to probe a little more of this because I don't understand it in full. But he seems to have a complex, subtle positioning on stuff regarding the Middle East. So not just a blind support for Israel. Not just a blind support for Israel. But our debate on Modern Day Debate will be specifically about Israel versus Palestine. Art Bell says, I suppose parenthood is about DNA survival, immortality from JF's side. Forget happiness. Oh, there is much happiness in my life as a father. Art Bell says, conclusion, findings suggest neutrality, namely that parenthood has limited impact on these dimensions. In almost all cases, the observable differences between parents and non-parents were tiny. Oh, that's that's a typical academic conclusion in departments of psychology, that parents don't matter. I absolutely deny this shit. And first, these studies are designed to conclude this. If studies wanted to be real about the total contribution of parents to a child's life, it includes the selection moment. It includes selecting the partner. And if you wanted to be real, you wouldn't be working with the current destruction of the control group that we're effectively doing by putting all the kids in public school. Of course, if you put all the kids in public school, you've just withdrawn 8 hours of the day during which the parents have no influence. So it's like these studies, they reach a conclusion that may be true in the current world. It may be true that with parents who spend 2 hours a day with their children, parents don't influence children that much. But compare with homeschooling, or compare within homeschooled children, and then you're going to get the 24-hour effect. In a way, we're studying a reduced experimental setup when we do in psychology these studies that show, oh, well, look, adopted parents, they're doing good. Biological parents, they're doing good. Well, it's like you have messed with the control group. The true control group for this would be full parental responsibility. That is, parents who are 24/7 with their children, parents who homeschool, and then you would see a place for more contrast and difference. Let's see what Philip has sent as a super chat.
In identical twins, how would the brain physically diverge over time if one follows sustained high achievement and extreme fitness, while the other experiences repeated failure and develops drug dependence?
Well, I will tell you what. First, the brains will not diverge very much physically. Secondly, at base, if they go through their life, the brains will be very similar, simply from the genetic fact of the genetic similarity. Now, also, the life events that will happen in their life, these life events will be pretty similar. So if one of the twins fall into drugs, the other will be likely to fall into drugs. But suppose that we have a pair of twins and they diverged in life and they had very different lives. What would be the expected effects? Well, If one was to consume dangerous drugs, drugs that are known to be brain damaging, like cocaine or other things, and if the other one wasn't, what you would get is a basically similar anatomy, but a slightly reduced, what we know that these drugs do, they reduce the prefrontal cortex gray matter. So right here, you have a shriveling of this area. It's a shriveling by the millimeters. It's not going to be visible. If you were to look at the brains effectively on an fMRI, you as an uneducated observer would not measure the difference. But a scientist might go and say, oh, he has a little less gray matter in the prefrontal cortex. Queen of Karma is coming for me. What an appropriate title. The Queen of Karma. She's like death. She comes to slash people with her. What is that called? A hoe? Or the Queen of Karma is here to serve karma. She says, why can't you admit to being a murderer? I have often commented on the, and thank you so much, Philip, for the big super chat. Extremely appreciated. I have commented, oh, it's a scythe. Yeah. Queen of Karma is coming with her scythe of karma. And she's trying to cut JF. I have commented on this many times. I am not a murderer, so I have not killed anyone. The fact that you don't accept this response is on you. It's not on me to go on forever and lay out how I'm not a murderer. You know, just think about it rationally and forget about anything I've ever said and realize this. I'm free. I'm not in a jail cell. That should tell you something about the probability that I'm a murderer. And you should reason your own way through this. You should ask yourself, do I have insights into the depth of the investigation that the police have done? Do I know the evidence? Has there been a public trial in which I was allowed to assess the evidence myself? No. Because the evidence doesn't even reach that level where it could raise a doubt. In fact, the evidence is extremely exonerating for me. So you're going to have to deal with the fact that it's not because you hate someone that he's going to be guilty of what you think he may have done. Queen of Karma says, I am JF. I do not like your answer. Lots of people who commit crimes are not in a jail cell. Lol. Well, what you like and don't like will never matter to me unless I have my dick inside of you. Now that's when I start caring about a woman and what she wants. But if we don't reach that threshold, there's a blockade. There's a lack of connection. You're just a random crazy woman on my regular chat. I can't care about you. I can't take you by the hand to this point. It's just not worth it for me. So go on in life and believe whatever you want to believe. Just be a prophet, the prophet of karma, and go spread your beliefs, your falsehoods, wherever you like. You are unimportant. You are nothing. Nothing. A little square, a little pixel in the universe. A dirt block, misplaced. Taxable. Queen of Karma says, my mom went to McGill University for her master's in neurophysiology. How come you didn't go there for your education? So now you're curious about the guy you just accused of falsehoods. Now you're curious about what motivated you in your studies, JF, to choose your particular university. I mean, this shows just how unserious you are. Like, you're already my friend. We're already chit-chatting about my university days. So the reason I did not go to McGill is that I'm a Quebecois and I am not transferred to a fully English lifestyle then. And McGill University is an English university. So I had no interest back then in going to an English university within Quebec. I considered myself a Quebecois francophone and I wanted to have a francophone university. Eventually, of course, when you rise in those domains, you reach a point postdoc where you have to go to the US. So at that point, you do switch to English universities. But I've always considered myself part of the Quebecois people, at least up to that point. And I had no reason to solicit an English education. So it's been 15 years that I've been on Twitter. This platform changed my life. I remember being at the lab bench in academia and having quite a dire view of my own future. I would be trapped in universities asking for permission to do meaningless experiments for the rest of my life, unable to use the potential of my brain for analysis of the real world. So I got reminded by X that I was there for 15 years total. That's quite impressive. That's quite a landmark, 50 years. It truly changed my life. And I would say that YouTube on its own may not have done that. The combination of YouTube and Twitter really created a magic. Created some mimetic magic in the early days, such that, you know, one could not totally obfuscate or shadow ban you without the other reacting. So it's like you had a recourse. You had a free market emerging, such that you could push a bold idea on YouTube and then make it meme on Twitter, and it was reinforcing one another. So I'm very thankful for having been alive at this moment where Twitter showed up. And it really gave me an opportunity, because when I was thinking about leaving the academia, the options that were out there was like, well, if I leave academia, I'm going to be like in a grocery store just placing milk. And I didn't mind. I did it, in fact, for a couple of years. Place milk in a grocery store, face the cheeses. But at least Twitter gave me an opportunity to do what I really love, which is teaching, public engagement, and pushing bold ideas on the public space. And there's nothing quite like Twitter that ever replaced it. There's nothing that allows you to put it in someone else's face. All of the other social networks, from Facebook to even YouTube to an extent, they all develop internal bubbles. But X is built as a public platform. And that makes it special. It's special that I can go to someone else's post and reply at the bottom of it. And it's special that he can get ratioed if I'm very right. That is what I value about Twitter. And when I look back at 15 years of public life on Twitter, I consider that I must have influenced about 50 to 100 million people. Think about the big days with sometimes 500,000 views on a single live stream. I've done this for years and years, and I've went through waves of mimetics, and I've went through waves of renewal, and I've seen people come and go. That's fascinating how many people come and go. You know, these people who rage quit the internet? Fascinating to me, the fact that there's such rotation, and yet I survive. I survived the days of censorship. I survived the days of COVID. censorship. I survived the days of early censorship for race matters. And we're breeding a little more these days. It seems that censorship has become kind of unacceptable, at least temporarily under Trump, for most things. I don't know if we'll go back. I don't know if we'll go back to another wave of censorship when the Democrats come back. Queen of Karma says, I have a lot of questions, JF. I've been waiting for this, and then you timed me out. Pussy move, man. You scared of a little Canadian woman? Is this not ask me anything? Well, you've asked your questions, and I've answered. So I don't know what else you want. Look, I'm looking for a wife right now. If you want to discuss this, we can. As far as the questions and the ask me anything, I think I've answered plenty of your questions. I don't see how we can move on to anything productive if you're just going to complain like this. Mike Modaro says, question. Thanks for your reply on a YouTube comment, but can you give me more detail as to why this war with Iran is clearly about Israel and not the petrodollar / China / BRICS? Thanks, JF. Well, first, you have to know that everything that's been done around Iran has been pushed by the neocons. And if you want a full documentation of the history of the neocon movement, I would refer you to Nick Fuentes' stream. Yes, it is all deeply tied to Israeli interest. So it's like, don't just blindfold yourself by thinking, well, the current situation with Iran. No, no, no. The current situation has been caused by about 40 years of history. And if you want to be real, in fact, like 80 years of history, which is the whole history of Israel's settlement in the Middle East. So if you just try these categories that you just mentioned, petrodollar, China, those are categories precisely meant to obfuscate the true nature of what's happening. It's not that they're wrong. You're right. The petrodollar is involved, and it's related to Israel. You're right. China is involved, and it relates to Israel. You're right. BRICS is involved, and it relates to Israel. At some point, you need to take the full constellation of facts. Ukraine is under Jewish control, under Zelensky. And Ukraine is waging a war at the front line between the empires of, say, Judeo-Western civilization and Russia. Meanwhile, for the last 30 years, we have been setting up around Iran to fragment a portion of the Russian-Chinese empire. So we went to Afghanistan and we went to Iraq because those were the weak countries that we were able to take temporarily to surround Iran. In the same way that many of the fragmented countries to the west of Russia, the small countries around Latvia, and then Ukraine itself, and its kind of novel domination over Russian areas while siding with the West, all of these phenomenons are clawing. The American Jewish Empire is clawing. It's clawing against Russia and it's clawing against China in a way that we wouldn't allow clawing. So take the constellation of fact that there are these forces in the Middle East that were under control of Iran, the Iran militias under Soleimani, for example. Now we killed Soleimani. And we've been waging war against these militias for 30 years to keep control of some parts of Iraq and to keep control of Afghanistan for a temporary window. These are all manifestations of the interest of different empires intersecting onto the same territories. They are ultimately all proxy wars. But you have then to ask yourself, they are proxy wars between what? And you have to ask yourself, what is getting America constantly into this conflict? And the answer is neoconservatism. And the neoconservatism that is official and that is termed as such, which is, as described by Nick Fuentes, an Israeli creation. And I believe him historically. I believe that's a proper description of the kind of infiltration of American right-wing thought that has been in operation since, I think it dates back since the 50s or 60s. And the neocon beliefs that are more subtle and more implicit, which show up when the Democrats take power. Because if you'll have noticed, the Republicans like George W. Bush start wars. But the Democrats don't seem particularly enthusiastic at stopping these wars. They continue them very much. So the Democrats are probably more resistant to the warmongering of Bibi Netanyahu. But when you get them involved in a forced war, they will kind of continue it. And they will kind of loosely maintain it. And then you ask yourself, who controls the politicians that are making these neocon decisions? Well, the most powerful lobby, AIPAC. And what it means also, which is the whole chain of interest from Jeff Epstein to Bibi Netanyahu, official and non-official lines included. So that's the answer for you. It's like, if there were disparate American institutions constantly paying to influence Israeli policy and forcing through these through this corruption of Israeli politicians with their money, and they were forcing the Israeli people to get into war, I would tell you, well, it's a Machiavellian plan of the U.S. But the reverse situation is the case. It's the Israeli billionaires that are paying into the American political system to subvert it. So agency is always a subjective judgment. You can believe at the end that, oh, JF, I don't believe I don't believe that AIPAC has this control over the politicians, or I don't believe it's enough to declare that Israel is at the root of this. But when you sum the fact that all of the Middle Eastern wars were special requests explicitly demanded by Israeli agents. Bibi Netanyahu asking for the Iraq war, saying, if you kill Saddam, you're going to have massive positive reverberations in the region. Weapons of mass destruction lies. Bibi's pressure to do war with Iran. The fact that Israel simply uses these opportunities to do even more bombing when the U.S. gets in. All of these factors combined. I don't see how you could make a case that this is not an Israeli war. They're the one demanding it. David last name sends a super chat. He says, check the chat for my super chat. I can't send it with the money for some reason. Okay, but maybe there's a key word in your chat that is making it be banned, because I don't see your chat. So maybe change your phrasing and I will be happy to read it. But for some reason, it seems that YouTube is abolishing. your chat and I'm not seeing it. ELDR says, I don't wish to see the Western Empire fall. It's ours after all. I don't care about multipolarity. I want to see my people free from foreign influence and psychopathy. Well, exactly. But I believe that we will have freedom once it falls. And that that is an individual tip that I give to males. Make yourself not worth it. And I believe that America must make itself not worth it. And there is a future somewhere in America. I don't know if it's going to be in the US or strictly in Canada. But there is a future in which there will be a place for white people to be left alone and sovereign. But that future comes when we are not interesting anymore. That future comes when the pressures of civilization, the wealthy, they all leave America and they all go away and they start getting interested in subverting some other nation. Now that day will be, I'll be happy that day, but we won't get much of the economic inflationary forever growth, you know, but in a way it's much more real, because the forever growth that we have in the current system, it's a scam. It's a system of theft. Because there are people placed within the system to benefit more from it than you. So you think we're growing, but in reality, first we're growing in theoretical numbers. And your quality of life at times isn't even growing in line with these numbers. So we have this illusionary inflation. And meanwhile, the growth is also a non-biologically sustainable growth. We have a growth that includes a kind of depth to it. For example, the growth of the GDP hides the fact that this GDP is growing from importation of people who become your competitors. And so your life doesn't improve when the GDP grows. So yeah, David, stop complaining. I'm not seeing your chat, and it must be because there's some word. I know it may not be controversial what you have to say, but it must be because there's some word in it that has triggered an AI response from YouTube. If you really want to send me your message and you can't put it in the regular chat, send it to me by email. Go to jfg.world and you'll find my email, and I'll be happy to read it. Yeah, Trump has been literally stealing $1.2 billion and sent that amount to himself. As part of the Board for Peace. The Board for Peace is absolutely ridiculous, but typical Trump chauvinism. It's creating this fake institution, the Board of Peace, which are basically the friends of Trump. And you see the usual suspects in it. I don't remember the list of people who accepted to join, but they're all Trump allies in the Middle East and elsewhere. And it's like, okay, this is not going to be a board for peace. It's just going to be a bunch of... It's going to be a cigar club of a particular gang. Now, of course, I don't like institutions in general. And if you ask me, the board for peace... The UN, it's one thing and the same to me. It's just that the UN is the other gang, and Trump now has his own gang. But he took money from the American government to fund this endeavor, which is kind of a private endeavor of Trump. It's like, we are here at the border of violations of ethics, and if the Democrats were in control, of the Congress, that could be a basis for corruption charges and impeachment. I do believe it's kind of corrupt at this. Now, it's not that the other side doesn't do it. I mean, Hillary Clinton, she pours money into the corporate system and then she gets hired for these speeches at millions of dollars an hour. So everyone does it. But definitely here, Trump did it. He sent money to an organization of his own ego. John Drake says, more than that, Trump has diverted $200 billion to friends and family, supposedly. I don't know how they are measuring this claim. I don't know about it. But definitely, we are in a world where success is absolutely through corruption. The meritocracy does not exist. You see how Trump is balancing the markets down and up? There's definitely leaks of information that places certain people into having the information before others. Whether it's the family of Trump, and he lets it go that, oh, you know, tomorrow I'm attacking Iran. Or maybe it's staff that are writing the press conference stuff. The problem is that alpha information has taken over the domain of trading. And trading isn't about even funding successful companies and knowing about what makes a company successful or not successful. It is purely about having the information before others. Sauber, as a judge, says, what are your thoughts on the 7.41 Dota patch? Techie's rework seems fun. Well, I've played only one or two games of Dota recently, so I've seen some changes. I've seen that the Timbersa has lost his blue saw. So that's one thing that I don't like, but okay, I'm willing to deal with a more powerful orange saw in as a consequence. But I haven't seen what they've done with the techies. I will have to go check it out. Dota 7.41. This reminds me, I mean, wasn't it this version number that was a big popular version of Dota back in the Frozen Throne days? I remember playing Dota 7.3, maybe. Something like it, maybe 7.41. I remember playing in that range. Wow, facets have been removed from the game. Wow. That is a big change because they introduced the facets very recently. And somehow they were not important enough. They were probably too annoying for people. They were two minor variations of the same character. So the facets are gone. Wow, I didn't even notice while playing it. Innate abilities no longer scale with other abilities level. Okay. The Tormentor spawn preference has switched. Health restoration now applies to all forms of life gain. Previously, it did not apply to incoming heals. Yeah, so they have this concept of health restoration now, which is a percentage boost on any healing. Okay. Neutral creep updates, item updates. Yeah, they came on with the splint mail. The splint mail has now changed. They changed the mana boots with the wizard hat now. Yeah, those are big changes, a big remake. I don't know what motivated this. I guess they went in the direction of simplification generally, but they complexified the neutral item system. So much more neutral items now. much more options to forge them. And then, oh my God, I cannot go through all this. They changed all of the heroes. Well, I don't have much commentary to give on this update other than sometimes there are these major updates that are just housekeeping. I guess it looks like a housekeeping update where they had a lot of accumulation of things that they wanted to do and they did it. Green Fez says, isn't this an AMA? Where are the questions? Well, I'm answering them. See, I was answering a Dota question right there. Factory goes up in flame following an Iranian missile attack on an industrial zone in southern Israel. So you have certain successful strikes on the side of Iran. There's been a lot of bravado and threat exchanges. Trump is now saying we will now leave Iran. We will now leave for our visit in Iran with a little gift. And we're going to blow up all of your electrical stuff and manufacturing and your desalination plants. So that's the most recent state of the threat. It's Trump again saying we will destroy everything. But we're talking with very good people right now, and it looks like we're not going to have to destroy it. So Trump constantly on this defense between aggression and leaving. That tells me that he would like to be able to come out with a symbolic victory, to be able to come out with something that he can say, that's a good deal, and we got this thanks to my aggression. That's what he's looking for, basically. What I see is a Trump looking for an exit. That's the current situation. So Secretary Rubio had to restate the mission's objectives: the destruction of Iran's air force, the destruction of their navy, the severe diminishing of their missile launching capabilities, and the destruction of their factories. Factories, all of a sudden, is making it into this list. So the goals of this war are so not clear, and the confusion of Trump's communication are so confusing that we have to restate these objectives. And even the objectives kind of change. Because there was a time where they were going for no nuclear. And you were hearing a lot of the commentators were asking for no nuclear enrichment of any kind. And Mark Levin is still, as of today, begging for boots on the ground to go get the uranium. That is so insane, crazy, and stupid. It can only be a tactic to get us into a situation where American soldiers will die in high number, and then Mark Levin is gonna say we need to avenge these American soldiers, and it's all a strategy to make this war eternal. I do hope that Trump is as a way out and that he's going to take it. I think it's still reasonable to hope in that direction. But definitely the Israeli interests are interested at extending this for the longest possible. Oh, and they also said we will not join an effort with boots on the ground. Fascinating. So they want to put America in trouble the more they can, but they wouldn't be there on the ground if America went on the ground. So we have this bizarre messaging between Mark Levin telling Trump, go on the ground, send boots on the ground, we need to get the uranium. And then we have Bibi Netanyahu saying, if you guys decide to put boots on the ground, we're not going to follow. And some of it is probably scammy. Some of this good cop, bad cop. strategy is probably kind of an organized scam of some sort, in the sense that they're probably attempting some sort of reverse psychology on Trump, or at least on the general public, so that Israel can say, oh no, look, we were less aggressive than Trump. But I don't believe any of it. I believe that Bibi Netanyahu caused this war. He wanted it to happen this way, and he's interested in getting America in the most trouble possible, so that America eventually comes to hate Iran enough so that he can get an invasion type of war. David last name says, won't be surprised at all if we are out very soon. The rhetorical framing and messaging has been consistent for the 4 to 6 weeks. We'll be back though. Yes, I agree. This is why it's been my prediction, and it still is, that we are headed toward de-escalation. I don't see Trump having interest. The only unknown to me is whether Trump is going to be pushed into continuing. It's possible that they will push so hard onto Trump that they just won't let him get out. But if Trump can have what he wants, I don't believe that Trump's in his heart wants a massive extended engagement. But what are the kind of constraints onto him? And are there promises? Are there promises of enrichment of his loved ones? All of this is possible. Or does he just feel beholden to the interest of Miriam Adelson or whoever? Doubting Thomas says, sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, not enough criticism has been focused. Not enough criticism has been focused on dispensational / evangelical Christians that have brought us into the Middle East over the years. They literally believe war with Iran is part of prophecy. Yeah. Yeah, there was a strand of critique of the neocons back in the 2000s, in the years of George Bush, George W. Bush. There was a strand of critique that was highlighting this prophetic aspect of the Republican Party's support for invasion of the Middle East. And they were highlighting, not necessarily Michael Moore himself. I don't exactly remember him, but people around that kind of Michael Moore pamphlet documentary, they were saying, look, they're just insane people with a biblical prophecy and trying to, they were saying this about the Christian Zionist of America. And I do believe it's a very important angle. I do believe that it's certainly partly true for a religious extremist minority who, I don't even know if they're a minority. In Israel, they might very well be the majority of the Jews. I don't know. But a very activist zealots. Yes, zealots would be the word, John Drake. A bunch of zealots are believing that it is a biblical prophecy to be occupying basically Israel with non-Muslims. That's basically the root of it. And from there follows everything. It's like, from there follows, therefore we need to control all of the countries around with the Abraham Accords, and then we need to repress any alternative uprising of alternative empires. All of this to secure this little spot that Israel is. But there's a point at which Israel is using this for much more than biblical prophetic stuff. There's a point at which Israel has basically recruited these Christian Zionists to grow an empire to grow an empire that it's almost certain will revert and become enemy or competitor to the US once they're done with the US, once the US has no purpose to them. So if you want to know the future of history, just think about a woman in a divorce, or think about a woman in a simping situation like Frog Tony. She uses Frog Tony, extracts the money, pillages the goods, and then moves on. This is what Israel will do with the US. They will extract, pillage, and then abandon. And eventually they might even be military enemies. But certainly the three first parts are that they will drain American society from all of its wealth, and then they'll run away with it. And then they'll make a move that rebalances powers on the planet toward a new civilization of their choice, and they'll move interest in there. That's what will happen. USPP4YM says, Jeff, some greatest ally Israel is, if not even fighting their own war. By the way, what is the American messaging even? At least in 2003, they had the weapons of mass destruction meme. Yeah, it's very confused in terms of communications. Trump, who is generally recognized to be a master of communication and marketing, this is probably the weakest war propaganda I've seen. To be so disorganized, to have so much pushback from the population, to have so much switches across the days. There's a time at which Trump was doing these oscillations, and it could be framed as 6D chess. It could be framed as, oh, Trump is so brilliant. He's throwing off the libs. But I think that in the particular case of the Iran war, that excuse has run its course. And people don't believe it. People don't, except the strong MAGA supporters who will always cheerlead Trump. I don't believe that the general population is satisfied with the idea that Trump knows what he's doing and that there is a clear and achievable plan. So Men of the West is insulting my cookbook. Well, my cookbook isn't out, bro, so you complain that there will be French snail sucking garlic. How many frogs do you eat recently, JF? Okay, so he's trying to do some attitude dismissal of my culinary knowledge and of the fact that I'm French. When's the last... See, the funny thing with frog legs is that it's not in Quebec culture at all. The place we were going to eat frog legs, because I did eat frog legs in my life, but it was always at the Chinese buffet. Always at the Chinese buffet in Saint Jerome. So, ironically, you guys say that French people eat frog legs, but the reality is I, as a French person, the only place I could find frog legs was in a Chinese buffet. The Silver Fox says, what are the chances that Alberta will be the last refuge for white right-wingers? Oh, I think it's pretty much this already in Canada. Then I think there may be a point in the future at which Alberta becomes unviable and we have to move north in the Arctic. But for now, Alberta is definitely the destination for anyone who believes in family or right-wing conservatism of any kind. The rest of Canada has been completely destroyed forever. There's just no way you can build effective families, and females dominate everything. you won't have your rights defended.
Jared Taylor is wondering if the Air Canada CEO should have been fired for not speaking
French in his address regarding their airplane crash.
Jared Taylor is wondering if Air Canada should fire should have been fired as CEO for not speaking French in his address regarding their airplane crash. I didn't know about this story. Air Canada airplane crash, French speaking. Air Canada CEO apologizes. Let's see what they say. For his inability to speak French after a plane crash. In Toronto, the chief executive of Air Canada apologized Thursday for his inability to express himself in French after politicians called for his resignation for his English-only message of condolences after Sunday's deadly crash in New York. I didn't even know there was a deadly crash in New York. Air Canada, Michael Russo. The guy has a Quebecois name and he doesn't speak French. Has been criticized for the 4-minute condolence video posted online that included only two French words, bonjour and merci. I am deeply saddened that my inability to speak French has diverted attention from the profound grief of the families and the great resilience of Air Canada. Antoine Forrest, one of the two pilots killed in the crash at the LaGuardia Airport, was a French-speaking Quebecer. Forrest and Mackenzie Gunter died when the Air Canada Jazz flight they were landing at LaGuardia collided with a fire truck on the runway Sunday evening. Okay, I didn't know. I think I saw that story, but it just went out of my mind. As far as the two languages of Canada, I'm personally against. I'm against annoying people with language, even if I have a strong nationalist drive and a strong love of French culture. I don't believe in imposition, and I don't believe in forcing companies to be constantly half and half. It kind of becomes annoying. Bonjour, hi. Qu'est-ce que je peux vous servir? What can I serve you? It's like all of the sentences copied twice. And we have press conferences that are like this these days, where they are entirely... where it's not a translator. It's literally the guy has to understand French and English and has to make his two statements in a row. I know this is what the politicians do, and there are laws in Quebec about this, forcing companies to do that. I personally think it's annoying, and you're not going to save a people with only language. So Quebec culture and Francophone culture in Canada is too obsessed about the language itself. And it's not thinking enough about the living, the genes, the demographics, the biology of it. So it's like I was looking at the social, perfect example for this. I was looking at a social media video of an immigrant guy who gets arrested by a female policeman in Quebec very recently. And he starts insulting her with a half Arab, half Muslim, half Quebecois language that is basically French, that has mixes of street speak from France, of Quebecois patois and Quebecois ways of insulting people. And the guy has mixed all of this and he's insulting a white police officer, female, with a very derisive tone grounded in, you know, Arab street speech and very misogynistic in his comment, like saying he's going to turn her into a slave and everything. And it's like, wow, this guy in many ways respects French more than the Air Canada CEO. This guy is compatible with the law, calling this female policeman a bitch in French and saying that he's going to enslave her in French and saying that she should die in French. So it's like, but this guy definitely is a problem to Quebec society. So I think that Quebec society, by obsessing with French immigration and preserve French and force all of the English people of Montreal to speak French, it's like you're putting a Band-Aid on something. But long term, it won't matter what people were speaking today. All that will matter is the number of babies that you've projected in the future and whether you raise them in French. That's all that matters. And then there will be competing babies that you've invited in that will only endorse French to the extent that they don't yet control your society. They can say the bonjour, aye. They will, but they won't have respect for French. It will have been imposed onto them. Down the line, what do you get? You get a trash culture at the end. It's not even populated by your own people.